What's going on, everybody? Cody Passby back with you. It's another edition of Wax Packs and Warning Tracks, Mojo Breaks Baseball Card Podcast. A little late this week, and we got a special edition of the podcast this week because of Memorial Day weekend. Hope everybody had a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend, holiday weekend. It's always a big weekend, Memorial Day, for baseball because it does represent a quarter mark in the season. It's always a big checkpoint in the baseball season. Where are you on Memorial Day? It's still early enough that you don't need to panic, but it's late enough that you've got to start to figure out who you are as a baseball team, what weaknesses need to be addressed, and if you're collecting those guys that maybe you took a bet on at the beginning of the season that have either clicked or maybe things have not quite lived up to the hype, as it were. So what we're going to do this week is kind of check in on how some of the picks we have made on this show have gone. Some of the guests I've had on and picks from myself as well. It's time to fill out the report card. What a big doofus I am, or how brilliant some of these guests have been on this show. We've had a lot of good ones so far. We're going to have more coming up in the next few weeks as the baseball season rolls along. But let's do it. Let's do a little quarterly report. Call this sort of your teacher's conference as we check in and see exactly how we're performing right now, how our PCs are looking, and how some of the biggest names in the hobby are doing so far. I'm going to start things off with the first episode of the show. We had RyeDog54. You know him on YouTube. Great baseball card content over there. Make sure to subscribe to him if you haven't already. We had him on when all of these huge prospects got called up to the big leagues. Some of those guys have clicked. Some of those guys, not so much. But I asked RyeDog, who was the guy that he was most looking forward to? Let's hear his answer and see if he was right. For the hobby, the biggest news heading into opening day is the massive influx of top prospects who are coming up to the majors. I think going into spring training, I thought, okay, Riley Green, maybe Spencer Torkelson, Adley Rutschman, and maybe Bobby Witt. But I thought, even then, I was like, conservatively, I think two guys of those four make it. Julio Rodriguez wasn't even on my radar to make it out of spring training. I thought he was going to be like a May call up. I didn't, especially like with the Winker move. I thought that's a lot. That's a kind of a log jam in the outfield. But he's up. He's up. Torkelson's up. Green would have been up, but he got the fractured foot. Rutschman probably would have been up, but he had the injury. And obviously, in Bobby Witt Jr. Of those three, which is the guy that you think has the most potential to hold their value going forward into the season?
So I do want to say one thing first. So like it's awesome that they're allowing these prospects to be brought up day one. I think it's sick. Again, there's still this dark area with that rule of like they need to be in like the top two in rookie of the year to like get that service time. So who knows if they stay up long term or not at the start of the season. I hope they do. But I was talking to someone on Twitter earlier today where it's like it's crazy how the baseball world is kind of, and especially the hobby, is kind of flipped upside down. How it's like right now, the biggest thing is these prospects coming up, to where I used to be like always focused on like who's the best player in the MLB right now. So I think that's awesome. And then as far as Bobby Witt Jr., Spencer Torkelson, Julio Rodriguez, so I love all three of them.
Yeah. Who does?
But I would say Julio Rodriguez has just been a different specimen in his entire career in the minor leagues. Like I Adley Rutschman a lot, especially because of what he brings behind the plate. But like as far as just like ceiling, Julio Rodriguez is the highest ceiling of all of them. His, a lot of people say like ceiling of multiple MVPs, like Mike Trout-esque numbers. Wow. Like it's not a lie. Like last year he had his first touch at Double-A. He hit 362 with a 460 on base percentage and over 1,000 OPS in his first taste of Double-A. Like, he is a guy that if he hits his stride, which I don't see why he wouldn't, he's literally never struggled in the minor leagues. He's raking in spring training too. Like, he could be an MVP candidate this year if he plays the whole season. He's
wow.
Seems to be that good. Like that good.
Literally went back in my seat. I can't believe it.
No.
I like him a lot though. I agree. And you know what? The thing going for him, I think for collectors, like the X factor, I think for collecting is like, do people like you as a person? Like, are you a marketable personality? And I think he is such a good personality from what we've seen. And the thing that was so telling to me is that I can't remember if it was the president of baseball ops for the Mariners. I think you remember last year where he went and spoke at some sort of the details are kind of escaping my mind, but he did not have very good things to say about like how the organization is run and like that's weird things like, oh yeah, no, J-Rod's not coming up this year. We're not doing that because we're going to push his value. And it's like, you just like completely mask off, like just exposing what these guys do and how they penny pinch. And yet he like rolled with the punches. He was so good about it. He was funny. Like that to me, like the moment I saw that, I'm like, this guy, if he could put it together on the field, which clearly he looks like he's doing, this guy's the real deal.
No, yeah, like you said, he's marketable. He's extremely likable. Like, I haven't seen anything where it's like, oh man, J-Rod's like a bad person. Like, he seems like an awesome guy. And then his size is another thing that's going to help him long term. He is just a specimen. He's like 6'3". It's funny because Baseball References had him listed at 180 for like the last 2 years. And I'm like, there's no way in hell this dude is a 180. And they finally updated. He's 228 now. So but his size is crazy. He's kinda super bigger, athletic. Yeah. He can steal bases. Like, Julio Rodriguez to me is that guy. I am kicking myself. Like, I have one card of his that's like decent. I have a couple stuff at PSA, but I have his Mega Box Refractor PSA 10, nice. which is like my J-Rod card. But like, I'm kicking myself because I've been all over him since 2019, but I really didn't start buying singles. Or at least higher end singles until like 2020. Mm. And by that point he was pretty expensive. So I was like, dang, like,
yeah, there was a brief window where I think J-Rod's value was like pretty underrated, but yeah, that ship has long since sailed. Julio Rodriguez did get off to a bit of a slow start, admittedly, but since May 1st, he has been on a tear, batting .314, a .533 slugging percentage, 6 home runs in the month of May. That's also good for an .879 OPS. I think we can file this right now in the win column. I actually got a chance to see the Mariners and J-Rod over the weekend on Memorial Day weekend, and I could tell you the crowd was chanting his name. The guy felt like a superstar. There was a buzz in that stadium when he came up to the plate. This guy is the real deal. I'm very, very excited to see what he can do going forward. Gotta fix the strikeouts, but he's also been one of the most unlucky hitters in all of baseball going forward, or so far this season. So going forward, very high expectations for this guy. If the month of May shows what he can do at the major league level, then collectors and Mariners fans are going to be very, very happy for a long, long time. All right, next up, another baseball YouTuber, very familiar name for baseball fans, Giraffe Neck Mark, Mark Luino. His New York Mets are absolutely on fire. They've been on a tear, the best team in all of baseball. Of course, you can check out his content on YouTube and check out his Mets podcast as well. All the info for these guys are going to be in the description to the podcast, so make sure to check it out. But I asked Mark about a guy for the Houston Astros who was off to a good start. Had a great weekend, a really nice story in that opening weekend where his parents were in town in Anaheim and hit a home run, made the folks happy. Hey, great story. And if it ended right there, it'd have been a nice little footnote in the season. But Jeremy Peña of the Houston Astros has continued to roll along. I asked Mark what he thought about the Astros now maybe star shortstop. Let's see what he thought. One of my favorite moments of the weekend, by the way. His parents in the stands. I think it was Friday night. They're interviewing him on TV. And lo and behold, it's like he knew. He hits the home run right on TV with his parents getting. It was one of the best reactions of the weekend. And he had a great weekend overall. 6 for 16, a home run, 2 runs against the Angels. Came into the year as Baseball Prospectus's 16th best prospect. He was in the top 100 for Baseball America. PSA Chrome Base Auto, PSA 10, sold for $300 recently. He's a guy that clearly, I think a lot of Astros fans wanted to see Carlos Correa back, understandably so. The guy just crushed the craziest looking home run I've seen since that ballpark opened at Target Field. That was Nelson Cruz territory right there.
Yeah, I didn't think anyone was going to hit one further than Buxton this weekend. And Correa was like, oh, hold on. Hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. And then Buxton hit those two that just sneak over the fence, too. Yeah, that team was, they were firing all the cylinders on Sunday. But Jeremy Pena, how are we feeling about him? Buying, selling, holding on Jeremy Pena's stuff right now.
So I think he was, I know he was someone I actually looked deep into this offseason. During the lockout, I was going deep into this. And Jeremy Pena was a guy who put on a lot of weight last year. It didn't show in his numbers, but his neck grew 6 inches or whatever it is. He's built like a tank. So I think the production is legit. I think he's going to be really good. I saw the cards going for 75 to 100 when I was looking at them back in December and January-ish time before obviously the Correa news with him leaving. If I bought them at that price, I'm selling at 300 just because I think that's probably a little bit of opening day hype right now. But I do think that Jeremy Pena at the right deal can be a very good player. Obviously shortstops loaded at the major league level, and it's only going to get crazier because now we have Bobby Witt Jr. We have all these other guys that are going to be coming up and sprinkling their way in here. But I really do think at a basis level, he's a very, very good player. But at the $300 price, I'm selling if I have any. I'm not holding much past that.
Yeah, and I think the thing to remember, too, and we talked about it on our first episode of the podcast here, but it's the Houston Astros. There's just something lingering over them that says cloud hanging over them. I don't know why. There's just this weird cloud hanging over them of negativity. You know, it's something might have happened in the World Series a few years ago.
Maybe.
Anyway, trash cans and whatnot. But there is something hanging over them in the hobby community where you wear that uniform and your value just isn't where it probably should be for certain players. If he was on, because it was a huge moment. He had a great weekend. He's playing a premium position. Yep. If he was doing that, let's say on the Yankees, if that exact scenario happened this weekend and he's in New York on the Yankees, his stuff would be going through the roof right now. For that, it's yes, it's a little high, but part of me is kind of maybe hold, maybe the stink finally goes away, and it should, because there's guys like him and Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez who are really great players who had nothing to do with what happened in 2017. So maybe give it a couple of years, and these guys, once they prove they can do it without the help of video replay and stuff like that, maybe not such a bad investment to get in on some Astros.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really does depend what you bought in on him for. Because, I think 300 is a tough sell for me. And it's probably a tough sell for a lot of people. It's a lot of money. And if you're trying to sell him, I'm like, okay, what could that 300 then go towards? Something we mentioned earlier. And I'm like, all right, there's a lot of really good prospects that probably have a higher ceiling, maybe a lower floor too, but a higher ceiling for sure that I would rather than put that 300 into. It's how I'm always looking at it. I mean, you saw that from the first video on the card channel, trying to make those investments, trying to make those flips for me. So for me, that would be an easy flip in my eyes. But if you held on to him, I don't think you're stupid by any means, because he's really good.
Yeah, very good player, great team, great scenario to be in. So Jeremy Pena, a fun story to start the season. Jeremy Pena has definitely clicked for the Houston Astros. Among all qualified rookies so far this season, he leads in slugging percentage, and he is second in on-base plus slugging. He is among the best shortstops in the American League, period. He may be your starting shortstop in the All-Star game. He's been that good. The Astros let Carlos Correa walk, and it's looking like a really smart move right now. Pena's cards have been on fire, and if you were able to score one of his cards for a low price or seemingly low price at the beginning of the season, maybe you thought, boy, it's a little high for this guy, but man, I think it's really paid off. One of the biggest payoffs, I think, of any player right now in the hobby. Jeremy Pena has looked great, and I think his market is only going to continue to rise. The power is there. The defense is there. And yes, he's in an Astros uniform, but he doesn't have that 2017 stink on him. What a good bet this guy was. What a good player he is. And I think going forward, it's only going to get better for Jeremy Peña. All right, next up, I talked to Susan Lejudai early in the year. Always great to talk to Suze about everything in sports cards and the baseball card world. And I had her on to talk specifically about the release of 2022 Bowman Baseball. Always a huge, huge release on the baseball card calendar. Talked to Suze about what her expectations for Bowman were. My feeling was, there's just not enough names that catch my eye right now. And we didn't know what the checklist was at the time. So before you jump on me, say, you idiot, you don't know what you're talking about. We didn't know what the checklist was, so give me a break. We just knew Khalil Watson was there and that maybe Jack Leiter wasn't going to be there. Now, in hindsight, things have turned out pretty good for Bowman. One of the most hitter-friendly, hobby-friendly checklists in a long, long time. And to Suze's credit, a veteran in this industry, she knew that things were going to be just fine for Bowman as the industry and the sports card world has changed and collectors have changed. Here's what Suze thought about the 2022 Bowman release before it came out. What are your expectations going into this 2022 version of Bowman Baseball coming up soon?
Again, I think people are going to go crazy for it. You're seeing that, especially now with a lot of other products. Like the pre-sale on Topps Chrome is insane right now. So I think that you're going to find that Bowman prices, I think, are going to be silly. And I say silly because as somebody who's been in this hobby a very long time, I'm still trying to get used to these new prices and like just where the prices of wax and the prices of unproven prospects are. You know, it's at times like I'm having a hard time like reconciling these prices with what my mind knows these prices were once upon a time. But I do think you're going to see it because of the value of first Bowman autograph cards. Yeah. You see, you know, at Golden, we've had some pretty spectacular sales for these prospect cards. And, you know, it's for people who are okay hanging on to cards for a couple of years and like playing the long game, you know, they could be fruitful for them. So let's say you get, I'm a Yankees fan, so let's say you get a first Bowman card this year of Oswaldo Cabrera. And he, in a couple of years, like he comes out and he ends up being like, passes Anthony Bobbias like the next Yankee shortstop, or gets traded and goes to some other team was right. Like to be their shortstop. Like that's pretty incredible, you know? So you're going to have these cards of these players who have like these high ceilings, and combine that with the potential of what they could become. And like these Bowman prices, I think are going to be crazy.
Yeah, you know, I thought maybe, I mean, we don't have a checklist, I don't think, as of this recording. We don't have a checklist yet, but we do have at least some indication of some of the big prospects who will be in here. From everything I've seen, I don't see Jack Leiter anywhere in this set, which is a bit of a surprise. I was thinking, you know, when Bowman Draft came out, I thought, okay, they're going to obviously hold Jack Leiter. He is basically the next Steven Strasburg in terms of hype level among pitchers. Like, he's the first pitcher in a long, long time that I think collectors are going to gravitate to. So I found it a little interesting that they held him back. And yet, you said it, I think the hype level is still through the roof for this thing, despite the fact that I think when we look at the checklist, there's not going to be a ton of those recognizable names. Do you think that this hype for this product is going to maybe die out a little faster because we don't have, I mean, there's Khalil Watson, I know, of the Marlins, but maybe not as many of those big name prospects, at least at first, here on the checklist going for or of the outset.
Yeah, you know, Topps, they always hold back a little bit, you know. They don't release the entire checklist. I know there was a 2022 Bowman first edition checklist that is out, so kind of gave a hint as to who should be appearing in 2022 Bowman. I think Jack Leiter is probably a big name. Like, you're right, I mean, my husband is a Texas Rangers fan, so he's high on Jack Leiter. So that is a big name to be missing. But I also, part of me also feels like gone are the sort of days are like I'm trying to think how to word this, but like the prospects being like, do they have to be big anymore? Like these cards go for so much money now, like in general, even if they're like a high prospect or like a mid-range prospect, like I feel like in general their autograph cards, their first Bowman autographs, go for a decent amount of money. Having said that, this year there is the sort of competing rookie class, you know, the rookie card. You know, I always think of how to word this because of 2021 Bowman's best debacle, but it's like for the sake of this conversation, I'll just call them rookie cards.
Right.
So because of the 2022 rookie cards, like there's a huge checklist for them this year that, you know, Topps Chrome could overshadow Bowman this year for sure. But I do agree that like if Jack Leiter's not in Bowman Chrome, that's sad because, you know, you want to see. You want the biggest names coming to the draft coming into this product. And maybe they just didn't get a deal with him. And that's what the problem is right now. Like maybe he wanted too much money and they Topps couldn't come to a deal that made sense for both sides of it.
Yeah, that's a good point that it would be a bummer. But I think you also mentioned it that with the Topps Chrome rookie class that we're getting, I think there's also a feeling from Topps of like, well, hey, if Bowman's a little down this year, Chrome rookies are going to be through the roof. And then, you know, update with the potential of Bobby Witt and Spencer Torkelson, Julio Rodriguez. So I think things will basically even out for them as well. Yeah, I think Suze was spot on here. Bowman just kind of speaks for itself at this point. You don't need a big checklist anymore to anchor this. You don't need that big player to anchor it. It's nice to have that. But at the same time, so many hitters in that checklist. And I think there's going to be a long shelf life and a very healthy secondary market for Bowman for a long, long time. This 2022 Bowman set, as of right now, looks pretty good. And I got to say, I mean, the fact that you have one of the best rookies from this year, Brendan Donovan, in there as a first Bowman, is also going to really help the future of this product if he can keep things going for the St. Louis Cardinals. He currently leads all qualified rookies in on-base plus slugging. I'd say that's pretty good for kind of a throw-in guy in that set on top of all those huge prospects that collectors have been going after since it's come out. Suze is right on the money when it came to 2022 Bowman baseball. Really had a good time with the next guy you're going to hear from, Bailey Foolish Baseball. I mean, one of my absolute favorite go-to baseball YouTube channels. Funny, informative, all that good stuff. The guy is a baseball card collector as well, so I had to have him on to talk kind of from an analytics perspective and talk about the Braves, his favorite team. But we got into our taxi squad, as we always do at the end of the episode, and brought up a veteran that was maybe off to the worst start of his career and was off with one of the worst starts among qualified players, and that's Trevor Story of the Boston Red Sox. Things could not have gotten worse for the guy at that point in the season. So I had to ask him, is it time to jump ship on the former Rockies superstar? Here's what he had to say. One of the most disappointing starts in baseball has got to be the Boston Red Sox so far. They're in last place behind the Orioles in the AL East right now. Looking real rough right now in Beantown, but Trevor Story was their big contract, their big free agent signing. And you had to imagine that so many big free agent shortstops, one of them was going to fail. I guess I'll throw in Marcus Semien in there as well, even though he's playing second. But I think what's been kind of striking is that none of these big free agent shortstops, or I'd have to rack my brain a little bit, but off the top of my head, I mean, Seager has gone off to a slow start. Semien, Correa has had some ups and downs. And now Trevor Story, I think, probably the most disappointing right now so far. He's among the worst in OPS among qualified hitters, unfortunately. And his cards aren't super expensive. A 170 for a BGS 9.5 first Bowman Chrome auto. So the price point's not super crazy, but I also don't know how much better it gets. Maybe he turns things around in Boston and you do big things on the Red Sox, you're going to gain a lot of attention you weren't going to get in Colorado. I think we've seen like Nolan Arenado in St. Louis, so much more attention, I think, than he had in Colorado. And you've seen, I think, the hobby react swiftly. So where are we at on Trevor Story right now?
I think if you have a lot of Trevor Story, maybe he's a hold. Or maybe he's, you know what? I'm going to say sell because it's just, here's the thing about him right now. And I love Trevor Story. All last off season or not off season, last season I was talking about, he's going to be such a great signing for whatever team gets him. And the thing that has scared me off, he's not hitting great, obviously, but I'm not actually too concerned about that. I think he can hit just fine this season. It's just the overall value is so dictated by his ability to play a plus shortstop, and now he's like a second baseman for them. And a big reason why he's a second baseman for him is I've seen some like Trevor Story fear-mongering about his elbow, basically. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't, you know, some of like the velocities on the throws and stat cast, like he just doesn't have the arm strength that he did 2 years ago. And that's, I think, a big reason why he's, you know, mostly second base now, while they still have Bogarts at shortstop, even though, you know, Story at his best is a way better defender at shortstop than Bogarts. So I have legitimate Trevor Story concerns for now. And I certainly wouldn't buy, but I would lean more towards, I'm in that sell hold range right now.
Yeah, it feels like the right place to be. And I think even with the lower value for those cards compared to these other guys we're talking about, you know, and I can never, ever get my brain out of how they're going to, like, the Coors Field effect, especially seeing a lot of games in Coors. Like, I can never, ever separate my brain, even though there's been so many times where guys leave Coors Field and they're fine. Like,
yeah,
Matt Holliday, I just mentioned Nolan Arenado. These guys do fine. LeMahieu has been great in New York. So, and yet my brain still can't get past that. And a great place to hit in Fenway Park for Trevor Story. So maybe that does benefit him in the long run. But yeah, there are some defensive issues, I think, going into the rest of his career. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. That Red Sox team it's getting late early for that Red Sox team. And, you know, I think they'll be better, but the Rays and the Blue Jays and the Yankees are going to all still be really good. And, I don't really know what Boston, what they can do to kind of counteract that right now. Things are getting a little rough right now. Well, we've been tooting our own horn on the show here saying, boy, aren't we smart? We know exactly what we're talking about. But Trevor Story just proves that it's okay to be patient, that it pays off. The turtle wins against the hare, yada, yada, yada. You know all that stuff. Since that episode came out May 10th, 19 games have been played by Trevor Story. He's got 9 home runs. The man hit 5 in 1-4 game series, 27 RBIs, a 1,041 OPS. He has raised his OPS by nearly 200 points since that time. Things are going all right. And the Boston Red Sox overall have gotten back into the playoff race. They're right in the thick of it. So, not going to say I'll give myself an L on that one. Not going to throw Bailey under the bus, because Bailey was saying, hey, if you want to hold Trevor Story, I get it. Guy could come around, and clearly he has. Trevor Story has been one of the best players in baseball over the last few weeks. The guy has been absolutely on fire. And lastly, an episode from a couple weeks back, I had Doug on to talk about some of the most overrated and underrated guys in the hobby, and we had to get into Jason Dominguez because things were not going well for Jason Dominguez, one of the biggest names among baseball card collectors. Last year, he struggled in single A. This year, he was struggling again in single A. Uh-oh, red flag. Sound the alarm. Things are not going well right now for this young man. Yes, just a teenager, just a young man, just a boy. But it did give me pause about what to do with his cards and obviously the huge investments people were making in his cards for such a young player who hadn't proven anything at that point. So Doug and I dug into it, talked about investing strategies for him, what to do if you had invested in him, and what his future would be in the hobby. Let's take a listen. The definition of do not buy, do not invest heavily super early. I think you already know what I'm going to talk about. It's a Yankee. It's Jason Dominguez. Mm. I really wish that I was not just always talking about why this is too much to invest in this guy. I wish that I could come on here and say, wow,
yeah,
Jason Dominguez is great. I am wrong. Good for him. Good for the Yankees. Good for the hobby. This is awesome. Through 123 plate appearances, though, in low A, he's back in low A, it should be mentioned. Wow. He has to repeat in low A. He's 19. I know you're screaming. He's only 19. What were you doing?
Time, yeah.
What were you doing when you were 19? I get it. But 233 average, 276 on base, 388 slugging, 43 strikeouts versus 7 walks so far this season. It's not good. And he's doing worse than he was a year ago. All that to say that his Gold Superfractor PSA 10 auto sold on golden auctions for just $100,000 less than that red Vlad Guerrero Jr. $474,000.
That's when the hype of a player it's like the Zion effect right. In basketball. Like Zion hasn't done anything, but the name is just everybody wants that name.
Yeah, exactly. And I know his. It got to a point where even those base chrome cards with no autos, with they were graded well, were selling for like $200-$400.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're still selling for about $100 right Jeez. Now. Man, this is just the biggest buyer beware is right here. And again, I want him to succeed. I know he's only 19, but
in what position? Is he an outfielder?
He's an outfielder. Okay. It's just not happening. And I think to make it worse is there are articles coming out from scouts who are just saying it just looks like he's taking a step back. And if you are someone who invested in him,
must have a hole in his swing somewhere, obviously,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I haven't watched a whole lot of his at bats.
Watch a little bit, and he's just swinging at everything. Totally undisciplined, which, again, if you're 19, that happens. You're going to grow into it. But for the second straight year and for how much was invested, maybe I'm going to sound like I'm going to eat crow one day, but I just would get out now.
Yeah.
Got to get out right now.
Yeah, I would love to go against you, but I've been watching the decline of his cards, and, I think I have a blue somewhere of his, and, you know, it's just been frustrating to see his, like, 200 batting average or lower than that. I think at one point it was, like, almost 100, you know, and then it's just not been improving. And, like you said, he is 19, but at some point, I mean, Ronald Acuna was 19.
Right. Juan Soto was 19 in the majors, hitting 22 homers.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the thing when you say, wow, I can't believe that Acuna's this much, Soto's this much. They were teenagers doing that in the major leagues. There's a reason they're that much. Dominguez is not.
And a lot of guys can hit a fastball 500 feet, but
right,
it's the guys that can hit the curves and the sliders and the off speeds and the, you know, if pitchers in the lower level have figured you out.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen when you're facing a Verlander or you're facing, you know, a Greinke or some of these guys that are going to just blow you away with their stuff? That's it. I mean, I know these guys overseas are taught to, like, you know, hit home runs because that's
what'll get you up in the
majors. Yeah, and that's, you know, there's a lot of them out there, and they're all, you know, some of them are relatively poor families, and this is their meal ticket. And, you know, hitting the ball the opposite way for a single is not going to get you, you know, looked at, and the massive amount of home runs is. And that's what got him looked at, and that's what got him on the squad. But if he can't hit off speed, if he can't hit curveballs, then...
Yeah, the good news is time is on his side.
Yeah.
Again, Soto and Acuna, these are exceptions to the rule. There's a reason they're huge, because they don't come around very often. These are once, twice in a generation sort of guys. So Dominguez may not be that once in a generation guy. And I think that if you are a collector of his, you might have to just take a step back and say, if you really believe in him, say, that's okay. It's okay that he's not a once-in-a-generation guy. He could still be a great player. He could still come up at 22 years old. That's a while from now, and completely have changed the entire narrative about him. There's a lot of time.
There's a couple guys, and this is a name from the past, and, you know, as a Giants fan, a name that comes to my mind. He didn't have the hype that he did, but Angel Villalona.
Yeah.
Very similar makeup. There's also a guy on the White Sox, Dayan Vicieto, kind of same body of work, where it's like guys are hitting 500-foot home runs, like he's just crushing the ball, but they just never got to the point where they could hit big league pitching.
Yeah, it's going to be about. He's still so young. If he can get patient, get that swing, discipline, then he could have a great career ahead of him. And again, the Yankees are not in a rush.
Yeah.
To bring him up. They've got plenty of time. And again, if you're a Yankee fan, is thinking, oh no, the prospects, they got plenty of other good prospects there as well. Volpe among them at the top of the list. But I think if you're looking at the most overrated player in the hobby right now. It's kind of year number two where we're saying it's Jason Dominguez, and until proven otherwise, he's going to be the guy that I think is just too much was invested in him too early. So the lesson learned, just take a little time before you know, if you pull one of his cards, great. Go ahead and sell that thing, maybe ASAP, but until then, maybe don't make that. Don't sell your card for what you could buy. Don't buy a card where you could buy a house for it for a guy who's literally just is not even legal to
tell your yet. And then you're going to be telling your non-card friends that you bought this, and they're going to be like, oh, I don't even know
who that
is.
Bought a card of a teenager for $500,000. Yeah. Think of how that can sound.
Do you hate money?
Well, this is another one you could probably file under the loss column for now, since the release of that episode. Jason Dominguez has played just 12 games, but over his last 52 plate appearances, he's hit 2 home runs, 8 RBIs, 8 walks versus 13 strikeouts. That is a huge part of the reason why he's starting to do better. More patience at the plate. He's batting .390 over that span with a 1,159 OPS. The Martian is starting to look out of this world. Very, very good news if you're a Yankee fan, and very, very good news if you invested a lot of money in Dominguez. Hopefully this keeps up, and hopefully he starts to show enough that he can start to rise through the ranks of the minor leagues. I'm rooting for the kid. I really am. I know it might be a negative Ned with Jason Dominguez, but I'm really rooting for this guy to hit it big, because, boy, what an incredible fun time that will be in the hobby. And if you're a Yankee fan, be really, really exciting. Clearly, as if things aren't already exciting enough for that team. Well, that's going to do it for this week's special edition of Wax Packs and Warning Tracks. Again, thanks to all the guests who have joined me so far on the show. We have new episodes coming out over the next few weeks with more new guests that you know and love from the hobby. Baseball, social media influencers, YouTubers, all the like. Gonna have a lot of fun this summer talking baseball cards and talking ball. Of course, make sure to follow us at MojoBreak_com on social media. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast. New episodes every week, every Tuesday usually. This week a little different with the holiday, but every Tuesday we have new episodes of Wax Packs and Warning Tracks, and new episodes of The Hype every Thursday. MojoBreak Sports Card Show, that's what to search if you haven't already subscribed. MojoBreak Sports Card Show. Cody Pasby signing off for this week's edition of Wax Packs and Warning Tracks. We'll talk to you next week.